switcheroo yesterday. Last weekend, you're aware we had a visioning weekend for the entire conference. In fact, Dr. Hager was there from your church and maybe others at Camp Myvidon. And so people came from all over the conference and they brought their ideas and their dreams and their viruses. And we all got close and ideas and dreams and viruses were shared. And so we have lost our president and our vice president for administration this weekend because they were on the receiving end of some of the sharing. So anyway, Dr. Elder Jameson, our conference president, would like to greet you on behalf of our entire conference team. And I do want to encourage you that at 3 o'clock this afternoon, the really fun people, we're all here. So we'd love to have you come join us down in Wenatchee for our seminars. I was looking, all the seminar speakers survived. So at least as of last night, they were all doing fine, and so all the seminars are going to be happening as planned. however, Elder Jameson will not be there answering questions. Elder Eric Brown, who was going to be speaking here, will be answering questions there, and he's preaching there at East Wenatchee this morning. So we all traded around. I know I heard somebody went looking for me in Chelan. I'm not there. I'm here. Anyway, I just wanted to share with you before I speak. First of all, let me just ask. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm aware that it is not far until noon. So do you stop at noon? Because I can give you the appetizers or the meal this morning, and I just want to let you choose. Would you like to finish at noon or finish when the message is done? What's your preference? When the message is done. If you need to leave, I won't be offended. I've been around long enough. I know people have to go sometimes. And if your casserole is burning, by all means, please go, because I don't want to eat it burnt. Just wanted to share with you briefly a couple of things we're praising God for in the youth department of the conference office. This summer, Camp Myvidon, who's under the direction of our youth director, Jeff Wines, my boss and good friend, Camp Myvidon broke an attendance record that was set years ago when I was in college and Gordon Pfeiffer was our camp director. So we had more campers than have ever been at camp in a summer in the entire history of the camp. And we had the highest number this summer. And the amazing thing is when we set the record last time, we ran camp for about 12 weeks. That was the length of a contract for a staff member. And they set the record running 8 weeks this summer. So they broke that record. So that tells you some things have changed. If you want to talk about that at lunchtime, I'll be happy to share what's different and how they did that. So that's exciting. I'm also excited to announce that Pathfinders and Adventurer Ministry is exploding in a good way in Upper Columbia Conference. We kind of shut down during this 2-year experience that we shared globally, and our clubs have started coming back online, and I'm super excited to say that 3 weeks ago, or four, I'm losing track, many of us, in fact, some of you here, were all together in Kalispell, Montana for a North Pacific Union Pathfinder Camperee. 4 or 5 months ago, those of us who were planning the event, we were looking at the news and looking at the price of gas, and we said, you know, COVID is surging again, and gas is surging more. We don't know if anybody's going to come. And so we were making a budget, and we said we should probably budget for 750. Because when you're budgeting union money, you don't want to answer to the union treasurer for why you went so far in the hole. And so we said, all right, let's make two budgets, one for 750 and one for 1,000. And at the time, based on our registrations, 1,000 seemed like a ridiculous faith statement. I'm happy to say that we had 1,653 people join us in Kalispell. And God blessed from every conference in the union, including a club from Palmer, Alaska, which was pretty cool. Our speaker was Ron Whitehead, the executive director of the International Pathfinder Camperee that's been in Oshkosh for a lot of years and is moving to Gillette, Wyoming this year, a couple years from now. We're super excited about that, those of us in the West Coast anyway. And Saturday night, Pastor Ron made an appeal for people to make decisions. And I just want you to just sit with this. We spent just a few days there together. And when he made his appeal, we had cards and pencils passed out to everybody in the audience. 236 young people made decisions for baptism. 98 of them from Upper Columbia Conference, 2 of them from my house. You can guess which ones I'm most excited about in that list, but I'm excited about all of those decisions. So we have been blessed. This spring in May, there was just shy of 400 Pathfinders gathered for our Pathfinder Outreach Fair in Wenatchee, and we had over 600 at Kalispell Camperee, which is back to where our numbers were pretty much pre-COVID. So we are rejoicing, and we're also excited about some of the things that God has done during that pandemic season, that we're seeing some really exciting dynamics shifting in our ministry there as well. So just a little update from the conference office. This morning, I want to talk with you for a little bit about what God is calling us to in Brewster, Washington. And so the title of my message is Becoming Trusted Sources in a World of Fake News. And I want to say a huge thank you to the AV team, who has literally run around town trying to make sure that this would work for me this morning, and I'm grateful. So we'll see. I may just come stand here with you, because that was the solution earlier. Are we working, or did I turn it off? Maybe I turned it off. Nope, it's on. I do not have the power. If somebody does, can you just click the slide ahead? Because I'm feeling out of control. I think it's more than a feeling, Doug. All right, there we go. So here's the question that I wanted to ask you this morning, the question that I've been asking myself for a while now. I haven't checked the numbers in a while, and I know, we could start a whole debate, and that's not my goal, about how we count and blah, 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 and that's not my objective at all. But I looked up online some months ago, and I said, how many people are reported to have died from COVID over the last 2.5, 3 years? And at that time, we were at 6 million people on planet Earth that had been reported died from COVID. I lost a family member. Maybe some of you did too. And it left me wondering, why am I here, right? In our conference, a lot of people quit attending church, and many haven't come back. And yet here you are, and I would just say, why are you here? And as I drove up here, I don't know that I've ever been to your church before, but I just want to ask you this morning a question that I ask myself, and I just want to reflect together. Why is this church here? What a beautiful location. I drove by it, and I was early, so I said, I want to go explore a little more and just get a feel for the community. And when I came back from up the road this way, I'm like, wow, this beautiful structure just jumps out at you off the hillside here. But why? Why is the church here? I got my answer years ago when I was about 9.5 years old. My dad and I were returning from dropping my big sister off at Milo Adventist Academy in Southern Oregon. We lived in Albany, Oregon at the time, and my sister's 10 years older than me. I like to remind her of that every time I get a chance, that she's a very old woman. And so she was a student at Milo. She'd been on home leave, and so we had taken her back down, and I think we'd stopped at Rice Hill for ice cream. That was an obligatory stop there on I-5, any of you that know that part of the world. And my dad and I were almost home. We were about 8 miles from home, driving a little Volkswagen Squareback. My dad was driving. I was asleep. Neither of us were wearing seatbelts, because that wasn't really a thing back then. And I was asleep with my head in his lap. And we're closing in on home. We're northbound on Interstate 5 there, just outside of Albany, Oregon. And that's when it happened. My dad did what he has done many times over the years, but this one was a little more catastrophic than normal. He fell asleep at the wheel. And I want to say, and there we are doing 65 miles an hour, but it was a Volkswagen Squareback, so probably not. 55 maybe, but we're going freeway speeds for a Volkswagen Squareback. My dad falls asleep, and the car begins to drift towards the right-hand shoulder. We know these things because people watched the accident unfold and they told us what they saw. So the car begins to drift towards the right-hand shoulder. I'm asleep, my head in my dad's lap. And as the front tire drifts off the pavement and hits the gravel, the sound of the gravel in the wheel well wakes my dad up. And the first thing he sees is a reflector coming right at us at 55 miles an hour. And he does what any one of us in this room would have done. He turns the steering wheel to miss the reflector. And in that moment, two things happened. The front tires caught pavement and began to turn the vehicle. The rear tires lost traction in the gravel, and the rear end became the front end at 55 miles an hour. And when the rear tires connected with the pavement, physics took over, which I do not fully understand, but our vehicle launched into the air, rolling over and over, and landed on its wheels in the median between the north and southbound lanes of Interstate 5. So we flew over two lanes of traffic, the shoulder, and landed solidly in the middle of the median there. Now, that's not where I landed. Somewhere in that rolling and tumbling, I exited the vehicle because I was not buckled in, and I was thrown from the vehicle, and I continued to fly clear across the median, and I landed on the white line on the left-hand side of the southbound lanes of Interstate 5. I woke up to the sounds of a semi-truck going by my head, Jake brake on, and the clatter of a gas can that had been thrown from our car, and the truck hit. The next thing I heard, cars stopping, doors slamming, I heard my dad kicking open the door of our car and yelling, "Richie, Richie, where are you?" A miracle happened that night. My dad did have some injury. A couple little spines that stick off of his vertebrae were cracked, and so he got to wear one of these cool little braces for the next 6 weeks, which I thought was pretty fun for him. I, on the other hand, I got a free ride to the hospital in an ambulance, my first and only in my entire life, which I thought was awesome. And when I got to the hospital, they checked me out, and my total sum of my injuries included bruising, which makes a lot of sense, right? And some scratches, and I'd lost my glasses, which we found the next day. So I got an ambulance ride, Jell-O, and I was out, which I thought was a pretty good night. Our pastor came and picked me up and took me to his house for the night. My parents were divorced, and so it was just my dad and I living at home. And as Pastor Sid and I walked out of the hospital there in Albany, Oregon, at 9.5 years old, it hit me. My life was spared for a purpose. And that was the beginning of the answer to my question, why are you here? That was the beginning of my answer to that question. You know, I don't know. We had it working. Can you bump the slide for me? I can just say next. There we go. Jesus answered the question why he was here next in Luke chapter 4, verse 18. And this is the answer. Jesus maybe hit it again. Jesus gave this answer as to why he was here. Oh, and it's just moving slow. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me to do these things." This is Jesus' mission statement. "To preach the gospel to the poor. He sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed." Next slide, please. And then He finishes up, and there we are, "to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." Jesus began his ministry. If we look at his ministry, he began his ministry with this mission statement. And as his followers, his mission has now become ours, right? But every once in a while, it's good to reconnect with that mission that we're called to and remind ourselves, why am I here? Why are we here? Why is this church here? And how do we go about doing this mission that we've been called to join him in? Next slide, please. You know, over the last 6 years, something has shifted in our nation. At least this is my assessment, right? Something has shifted over the last 6 years. I don't know if our feelings have changed or they were simply exposed, but trust has faded to a distant memory. How many of you have noticed that you trust less than you used to 4, 5, 6 years ago, right? Our trust has been completely undermined. We don't trust a lot of things. I'm not sure where that all comes from, but let's take a look. Next slide, please. Let's take a look at some of the things that we're struggling to trust. So I just want you to, if you feel courageous and safe enough, just raise your hand as we click through these questions. It says stand if don't stand. Just raise your hand. Raise your hand if these things are true of you, and we're asking the question, who do you distrust? So if you'll just start clicking. Do you distrust the media? Raise your hand. Okay, Brewster's solid on that one. How about, do you distrust the government? Well, no, you're pretty clearly there too. All right, how about I distrust, oh, now I'm meddling. I distrust vaccines, right? Oh, and we're all over the map on that, okay? How about this one? I distrust politicians. Now, if your hands aren't up right now, there should be. All right, that's another conversation. Next one. I distrust the economy. Whoo, yeah, I'm feeling a little shaky on that one. Next one. I distrust TV preachers. Yeah, I'm going to let Elder Bradshaw know, the folks in Brewster, your numbers are not as high as others. I can tell you that right now. How about this one? Whoo, this is getting a little close to home now. I distrust denominational leaders. Right? Yeah. I've got my hand up and I am one. What does that say about me, right? So here's the question that I have for us as a church family. If we are feeling this much distrust inside the house of God, those of us who know the end of the story, who know how this ends, who know who's in charge of how it unfolds, if we're feeling this kind of distrust inside the house of God, what might our neighbors be feeling who are outside, who maybe don't have that security, who don't have that hope? How much more must they be living with incredible, overwhelming distrust? Next slide. You were already there, but that's all right. We'll go back. Click again, please. So one of the things that has happened over the last 6 years, I believe, is that truth has become tribal. When I said this the first time, somebody yelled out, "What do you mean by that?" What do I mean by truth has become tribal? Simply this. The way that we determine truth and what we believe is true today, in many cases, not at all, had a great Sabbath school here this morning in the sanctuary where we could argue and wrestle and debate and smile and enjoy each other's perspectives. It was fantastic. But in many cases today, in our communities, in our conference, and in our nation, we determine truth just like this. If your truth sounds like my truth, it must be true. That's what I mean when I say truth has become tribal, right? That means we can't talk to each other. We can't hang out with each other. We can't listen to each other. And sometimes we can't even worship with each other because truth has become tribal. If you believe what I believe, you're in my tribe, and if you don't, you're not in my tribe, and I don't have anything else to say to you. Next click, please. So how do people decide what's true? Click again. They look to what we call trusted sources. But here's the challenge for Seventh-day Adventists. The challenge is, how do you become a trusted source in Brewster, Washington, for your neighbors in an age of fake news? How do you become that trusted source? Because if you're not in their tribe, or you have a perspective that is slightly different, then you are not a trusted source. And here's what's changed. If you read history, I love history, and I love the history of the church. Seventh-day Adventist Church got its start in an age when Americans wanted to know what was true. And their favorite way to figure that out was to have people who had differing perspectives set up a debate, argue it out, and whoever made the best case won, and then they would know this is what's true, right? That is not the world we live in today. But we are part of a church, and by the way, this is not just an Adventist problem. We are part of a church designed for a world that no longer exists. Hear me clearly. Our message is designed for the world in which we live, but we're part of a church that's designed for a culture that no longer exists. So how do we become trusted sources so that people who would not listen can hear what we have to offer? Next slide, please. We've actually been given a blueprint, a roadmap. This is a game plan for the times in which we live. Next slide. And I'm super excited to share this with you this morning. I'm going to move quickly. Oh, there we go. When I was in seminary, I was assigned in one of my classes to memorize a passage. Fanny Crosby may have memorized entire books of the Bible. I was doing good to get one paragraph from Ministry of Healing. And I memorized that one paragraph, and I don't think I ever took a look at the paragraph on either side of it, but I want to share with you both of all three of those paragraphs this morning because about a year and a half, 2 years ago, God started me on a journey, and I went, whoa, look at this. Let me just share. What does the world need? By the way, all the pictures you're seeing on screen, these are all taken in Upper Columbia Conference. This is Malden, Washington, fire that burned on Labor Day. Was it the same day that you had a fire? Was it up here as well? I think so. Was that Pateras? What does the world need? The world needs today what it needed 1,900 years ago, a revelation of Christ. A great work of reform is demanded, and it's only through the grace of Christ that the work of restoration, physical, mental, and spiritual, can be accomplished. Next slide. This is the paragraph I had to memorize. You've probably heard it. Christ's method, what? Alone. What does alone mean? It's the only one, right? It's all by yourself. Christ's method alone will give true success in reaching the people. How did he do it then? Here it is. The Savior mingled with men as one who desired their good. Let's just pause right there. How are we doing at mingling in Brewster, Washington? Do we attend the community events? Do we attend the public school events? Do we attend anything that puts us in contact with our neighbors? Jesus mingled with men as one who desired their good. In fact, he mingled so much with such questionable characters that he gained a reputation as a drunkard. Not suggesting you go imbibe. I'm just suggesting that there's probably some space between how we mingle and how he mingled. He showed his sympathy for them. He ministered to their needs and won their confidence. How many steps is that we've gone through so far? Is that four? Mingled, showed sympathy, ministered, won their confidence. Four steps. Then he bade them follow me. I grew up a Seventh-day Adventist. How many of you grew up Seventh-day Adventist? Anybody? As long as I've been alive, my dad, when I was a little boy, my dad, if there was a prophecy seminar within an hour's drive of our house, we were there, right? I've got it, right? I got it from a time I was a wee boy. Got all the prophecy stuff. But from the time I was a little boy, we as Seventh-day Adventists have given ourselves a pass on this one way of reaching our neighbors. You want to know what the pass is? We've looked at prophecy, we've looked at the newspaper or the evening news, and we've said, there's not much time. We don't have time for all these other steps, right? Because they're messy and they take time and you can't measure them. It's hard to count. Like, what does it mean? Did we mingle today? I don't know. Can you write that down on your report card? No. Right? And we've given ourselves a pass and said it takes too much time to build relationships with our neighbors. And so we just go straight to bid them follow me. And we mail out the handbills and we schedule the evangelistic series, right? Should we mail the handbills? Yes. Should we do the evangelist? Yes. But if you want to do interesting study, and the next paragraph will say a little more about this, compare the impact of a series when you're bringing people you have built relationship with to the impact of somebody who simply got a flyer in the mail, right? I used to work for a company. My job was to help churches get those flyers into people's boxes. I know how it works. I know the formula. I know how much it costs per person through the door. Just ask me, right? I can give you the numbers. Next slide. She follows up with this. All this in Ministry of Healing 143. There's need of coming close to the people by what kind of effort? Oh, I thought we were just supposed to mail stuff to them. I have a church not far from my house. I know this church fairly well. One person attending that church lives in the community. The rest of them all drive in because they like how it feels, right? And they really want to reach that community, but they don't know any of my neighbors because they don't live there and they don't come to any of our community events. But they still want to reach them, and so they mail things to us. There's need of coming close to the people by personal effort. If less time were given, I wish he wouldn't say this. If less time were given to sermonizing and more time were spent in personal ministry, greater results would be seen. I was invited to a little church on the opposite corner of the conference from y'all several months ago, and they said, "We want you to come talk with us about how we can reach young people in our community." And I'm thinking, you guys are such a small church. Really? You want to reach young people in your community? And just, I had bias. We'll just say that. But I said, sure, I'll come. And I met with them. Five of them showed up for this meeting to talk about how we could reach young people. And I fortunately prayed. And I said, and so I felt impressed. And I just said, hey, tell me what you're doing already. In this little tiny church, they started enumerating all the things they're doing. They run two vacation Bible schools a year from this little tiny church. And on Halloween, they open up their church, and kids, like 100 kids from their little community, came to their church on Halloween. I'm not sure what they were doing, but the community loved it. So people are coming through their doors, and they've got all these amazing contacts. And then they look at me, you're going to appreciate this, and they said, but all these contacts haven't turned into one request for Bible studies or one baptism. And I said, oh, that's easy. And they looked at me, and I said, look, you're on the right track. You just need to keep doing more. I said, keep doing things with these young people until they know your names, and you know their names, and then they'll start asking you questions. You're on the right track. They already trust you. They're coming to your church. They're walking through the doors. That's more than a lot of churches can say. Now do more so you get to know them. And they looked at me and they got their faces kind of fell and they're like, none of us live in this town. We all live out in the hills and the mountains around here. It's really hard for us to do anything. Just to do church on Sabbath is a huge commitment for us. And I said, okay. Well, you may want to throw me out when I say this, but what if your church, and I'm telling a story here still, I'm not talking to you, but if the shoe fits, I'll let you decide. I said, what if your church made a commitment, maybe for a year, that you're going to invest less energy, maybe none, in planning church services, and instead put that time and energy into getting to know your neighbors in this community? That's what she's saying, right? So what she's saying, she said, if less time were given to sermonizing and more time were spent in personal ministry, greater results would be seen. Now, there were five people that came to the meeting that night. One of them got this big angelic smile. He just got so excited when I said that. And the others looked at me. And I don't know what they were thinking, but in my mind, their faces were saying, I knew the conference couldn't be trusted. I don't know what they were thinking about. She goes on. The poor are to be relieved, the sick cared for, the sorrowing and the bereaved comforted, the ignorant instructed, the inexperienced counseled. We are to weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. Now listen to this. Accompanied by the power of persuasion, the power of prayer. Thank you for referring to the 40 days of prayer that our conference has been on together as a journey. Let's not stop. Accompanied by the power of persuasion, the power of prayer, and the power of the love of God, this work will not, what's the next word? Cannot. It's not possible, right? Cannot be without fruit. There's the promise. Next slide. How do we do it? What does it look like? So if we were to break down those four steps, there you go. If we were to break down those four steps that were laid out in Ministry Healing 143 before the fifth step, he bade them follow me. I have translated them into more modern English. The first one is learn their names, right? How do you get to know people in your community? Learn their names. 2 years ago, on Labor Day, when a fire ripped through Malden, Washington, destroying 80% of the structures in the community, leveled it to the ground, something amazing happened because our Pathfinder Club in Spangle, which is about 25 minutes away, we had met as a staff. So I'm the director of Pathfinder Ministry for the conference, but I have boys in a club in Spangle. And so when my boys started Pathfinders, I looked at the director and I said, well, the Browers kind of come as a package, so what do you need? And she said, I need a boys counselor. So I'm also a boys counselor in a local club. And so we had met 2 years ago. You know, a lot of things were going on in the world. We met as a staff before the beginning of our Pathfinder year. And we looked at each other and we said, you know, this doesn't seem like the year to do Pathfinders as usual. So let's do something unusual. And we made a decision as a team that every week that year, when we met for Pathfinders, we would either serve our community or prepare to serve our community. That would be Pathfinders. And if we couldn't find a way to serve our community or prepare to serve our community, then we would do honors and the things that Pathfinders normally do. 10 days later, Malden burned to the ground. And our Pathfinder team looked at each other and went, huh, looks like an opportunity to serve. So how do you serve a community that's burned? We started calling around. Who's in charge? And we discovered Mayor Chris was the mayor of Malden at the time, and Miss Jenna, the lady in the red sweatshirt pointing there, was the town clerk. And so I called and said, hey, my name's Richie. I'm with an organization called Pathfinders. They said, what? I said, Pathfinders. I had to explain it, right? And I said, we'd like to help. What can we do? I said, we'd like to bring a group of kids down and just take a look. Would you be willing to meet us and show us around and show us some of the need? Because we'd like to help. And so we did. About 10 days after the fire, on a Wednesday night, we loaded up 3 or 4 carloads of staff and kids, and we drove from Spangle to Malden. And we got out beside the park, and everything was just charred and black. The grass was just ash, and the trees were black trunks. And Miss Jenna met us along with Mayor Chris. Miss Jenna is very warm and talkative. Mayor Chris, very quiet. And we started walking through the park. Every step we took, ash, poof, puffing up. And we walked across the park to the Malden sign where you see Miss Jenna there. And she's pointing at a 3 by 8 foot flower planter, a raised flower bed, right? And she says, do you think you could fix this? And I looked at her and I said, okay, let me explain something. I said, when we come, there will be hundreds of us. Think bigger. And her eyes went, woo! And we kept talking. Next slide. You'll see a little later what we did with that flower bed and so much more. So let me just ask you, do you know the names of the people here in Brewster, in your community, if you're not from Brewster? Do you know these people? Do you know these community leaders? Go ahead, just click through the list here. We're going to go quickly. Do you know them, your mayor by name? Do you know your town clerk? How about your postal clerk? How about the librarians at your library, if you're lucky enough to have one? How about the bank tellers at your bank? How about the pastor of the community church nearby? How about your town council members? Do you know these people by name? How about your public school leaders? Do you know them by name? Here's the deal. If you want to make an impact in the way that Christ made an impact, you have to get to know the leaders in your community, right? It's not enough just to know the leaders in your local church community. That's great. But that does not impact Brewster, right? I was in a church 2 Sabbaths ago, and my boss, Pastor Jeff, and I shared this message, and we asked in advance, what's your connection here in this church? And they said, well, you see that public school right across the street? We do mentoring and tutoring for students there every week. And guess who asked if that could happen? The public school asked the church. They have a diaper bank. They partner with other churches. We were in the Tri-Cities area. They partner with other Adventist churches, and they collect thousands and thousands of diapers to give away for free to families in need, right? Because diapers are expensive, and if you don't have money, that's tough. Baby formula might be a good one after the last year. But do you know these leaders? Because if you want to know what the needs are in your community, these are the people who can tell you. I can tell you in my hometown, Cheryl, who's the clerk of our town hall, knows all, right? She knows everybody. I walk into her office and say, Cheryl, who needs help? She can rattle off three names just like that, right? Cheryl, how are we doing on reaching kids in this community? We were getting all set to launch a Pathfinder Club to reach the kids in my community when I went and talked to Cheryl, and she said, you know, we just voted to give that little building across the road to a biker group who is coming into town to reach out to the kids with an anti-drug message. I'm like, okay. Oh, and the community church just launched a brand new youth group because they got a new pastor. Oh, okay. So you know what? That's not what our community needed, so we didn't launch it, because they already had things going. Now, am I watching for an opportunity there? I am. Next slide. The next thing we do, looking again at that list, is we show them we care. So we learn their names, we show them we care. Isn't that beautiful? That's what Pathfinders did to that flower bed. I think we had three clubs there working on that. They pulled out all the dead stuff, burned stuff, charred stuff, replanted it, left it beautiful. But they didn't just do that. In one day, we took 225 Pathfinders to Malden, Washington. In one day, we fixed this. We planted flowers in front of the temporary town hall, flowers in front of the temporary library, and flowers in front of the little community church that survived the fire. That wasn't all we did, though. We also knocked on every door of every trailer, RV, or surviving home in Malden and Pine City, and we gave them a gift bag just saying, hey, we're here, and we just wanted to let you know you're not forgotten, you're loved, and God is still looking out for you. And you know what happened? When the clubs came back who'd signed up to go knocking on doors, they looked at me, the adults, and they had these dumbfounded faces. They're like, I've never seen anything like it. They said, every door we knocked on the door, and the person opened the door, and they went, oh, the Pathfinders are here! Every single door. How many of you have gotten that kind of response when you went knocking on doors in Brewster, Washington? Right? Me neither. Ever. Why? Why were the people in Malden throwing open their doors and going, oh, the Pathfinders are here? We gave away lawnmowers to people who lost their lawnmowers in the fire. We gave away grow boxes to people that wanted to start growing flowers and food again. We gave away seeds. We gave away plants. We just rolled into town and said, we love you. We care. But they responded at the door the way they did because we'd been connecting with them for over a year already, building relationships. You know, in a community not far from where I live, there's some pretty cool connections have been made over the years. Recently, last fall, my family and I went to an estate sale in our little hometown. And as we were there shopping through this estate, somehow the daughter of the person who'd passed away found out we were Seventh-day Adventists. And she said, oh, do you know Dr. Thiel? And we said, yeah, we met Dr. Thiel before she passed away. And then she told us this amazing story, which I just shared with Dr. Thiel's son last weekend at Myvidin. She said, you know, when I was a kid growing up, their house was right up over there on the hill, and they had a flagpole. They had the only swimming pool in town. And all of us kids knew that when the flag was up the pole at the Thiel's house, that meant the pool was open and we were invited to go swimming. Huh? That's impact, right? Here's this adult woman sharing one of her fondest childhood memories, and she connects it to Seventh-day Adventists. Seventh-day Adventist physicians, Dr. and Dr. Thiel, who left Loma Linda University, moved to Fairfield, Washington, and served their entire career on Main Street, and were there with their partner, Dr. Hart. In a minute, I'll show you another picture of the impact their lives have had. I know of churches in this conference who this year wanted to make a difference in their community, and they went to their neighbors and they said, hey, if you'd like to have a garden at your house, just sign up. We'll come till it for you. We'll bring seeds and we'll teach you how to plant and grow a garden at your home. In a little tiny town, smaller than Brewster, 20 families signed up this summer. 20 families. That's a lot of opportunities for relationship. Let's say only 10 families followed through. That's still 10 relationships with 10 families. Amazing things. Every time there's a loss, that's an opportunity for the church to say, hey, we're just here to say, how can we help? Right? How can we help? Just be the hands and feet of Jesus. Next slide, please. So we're talking about how do we follow this, this method that she taught us. We learn their names. We show them we care. We discover and meet the needs that they see. This one is really, 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 really important, all right? So church family, if you're falling asleep, wake up right now. Now's the chance. A lot of times, the church says, hey, we know what you need. Come on over to our place and we'll give it to you. Right? There's a huge difference. And this is just something God's been teaching me since Malden burned and Pathfinders started getting involved in a new way and saying, you know what? We can do a lot to make an impact in the communities and change their perception of Seventh-day Adventists. But it begins with discovering and meeting the needs that they see. Right? So we may look around our community and say, you need a cooking class. And we could be right. We could be right. But until they say, I need a cooking class, we're not meeting their needs, right? So if we tell them they need a cooking class and they say, no, we actually just need a food pantry, we should create a food pantry, right? So meeting the needs that they see. When Malden burned, our club got spun into the most amazing year that some of us adults have ever had, and the kids still don't realize what an adventure they got to be a part of, but we made a decision that every time we were asked, we would say yes. Whatever the request was, if we could do it, if it wasn't something that was wrong or something we just literally couldn't do, every time we were asked, we would say yes. And that meant the phone started ringing, and we did one thing after another. And you know how many nights we spent doing just honors that year in Pathfinders? Zero. Zero. We were busy every night, all year long, the entire school year, serving our community and preparing and equipping ourselves to serve our community. We built clothing racks for all the clothing that had been donated to the fire survivors. We developed our own brand of granola. If you want to buy Blazing Grains granola, it is an Upper Columbia Conference Pathfinders brand. And it's raising funds for projects that started because of a big dream in Malden. Next slide. We need to meet the needs that they see. And then, win their confidence. How do we do that? By becoming trusted community partners. Right now, because of the work that Pathfinders has been doing here in our conference for the last 2 years, my phone and email inbox regularly receive contacts from community leaders reaching out to say, we have a need in our community. Could Pathfinders help? Why? Because we said, tell us what you need. We'll do everything in our power to meet it. I got an email. Let's see. My son was in Malden with Upper Columbia Academy this week. I got an email about 8 months ago from a gal who was the head of fundraising for the recovery effort in Malden. And she said, hey, can we meet in a Zoom meeting? And so another Pathfinder staff, Adventist engineer, and I met this lady in a Zoom meeting. And she told us this story. So her job was to go after grant funding to help with the recovery, and she got a $700,000 grant from the American Red Cross to build 7 homes for people who'd lost their homes, didn't have insurance, couldn't rebuild, right? Well, for whatever reason, they only ended up building 6, and if you're doing the math, you know that $700,000 does not build 7 homes, right? Not with the lumber prices the way they were a year ago. Well, it does if the Amish are coming from Montana to provide the labor and if the homes are small, right? So the Amish have built, I think, 8 or 9 homes there in Malden. Guess who cleaned the house that the Amish stayed in? Pathfinders. Guess who left granola for the Amish and flowers and a card saying thank you for partnering with us to help our community rebuild? Pathfinders, right? So the Amish are coming back to build these homes, but they're only building 6 homes, and so they had like $100,000 left over, and she had an idea, and she said, I wonder if we could landscape the homes that have been built and give them nice yards instead of just mud. And so she called the Red Cross, and her contact said, sure, you can use that money for landscaping. And her next thought was, I wonder if the Pathfinders. Wow, right? Another community, half an hour the other way, when they're thinking about planning a celebration for Flag Day and they want an excellent color guard to lead the parade, they think, I wonder if the Pathfinders, right? That same community, when they're planning a Memorial Day celebration where they put the names of veterans on plaques on a wall on Main Street right by Town Hall, when they think about where could we find some really good music, they say, we should call the Pathfinders. Why? Because we've become trusted partners. We've gone to them and said, what do you need? What do you need? We want to help. How can we help? And whatever they said, they've done it. You know what these kids are doing right here? After our tour of Malden, walking through the ash there, we loaded back up in our cars and headed back to our clubhouse there at Upper Columbia Academy. And when I got back, my car load, we were talking about astronomy and all kinds of cool things, super cool conversation, but not on task. The other car stayed on task. And the task was, we were supposed to talk in the cars about what does this community need in order to rebuild and grow back. How would they ever attract young families to this little rural community that's burned to the ground? It's nothing but rubble and stubble. And when we arrived back, our Pathfinder Club director there in Spangles, Cindy Williams, looked at me as I'm walking into the building. She's like, do you know what the kids dreamed? Do you know what their big idea is? And she had this deer in the headlights look on her face. I'm like, no. She said, the kids decided that what Malden needs to grow back and attract young families is a park. Now, how many of you have ever built a park before? Anybody? How many of you ever designed a park? Right? Me neither. And I looked at her and I went, a park? That's a lot of money. But you know what? The kids felt called to give Malden a park. And I can't even take all the time it would take to tell you what God did once we said, okay, let's go with the kids. But God brought this man standing there in the upper left hand. He's a professional landscape architect. He volunteered his time to teach our kids how to draw plans to design a park. And those kids started brainstorming, and they had some, you know, kid-sized ideas. Let's have a slalom course for winter skiing, and let's have water slides, and all these huge, big ideas, right? And so we started paring it down. They started drawing plans. That's what they're working on there. They're drawing plans. And by the spring of that year, these kids presented to the Malden Town Council professional drawings of two renderings of options for a new park in Malden. Now, we're not paying for it, fortunately, but plans are moving ahead for a park in Malden largely because Pathfinders said this is important. And the community went, yeah, and now it's happening. Next slide. Next slide again. Ah, there we go. It doesn't stop there. There's so many more stories I could tell. Two things survived the fire in Malden that became icons. One of them is this flag right here. This flag was on a pole right beside the fire station, surrounded by trees. The fire station burned to the ground. The trees all around the flagpole are scorched from the heat. But for some unknown reason, this American flag, tattered and worn, survived that inferno. The other thing it survived was a beautiful white country church with vinyl siding. The fire burned right to the foundation, so hot the vinyl siding melted and ran down the wall, but the church did not catch fire. Those two things have become the symbols of hope and recovery in Malden, Washington. And as we met with the mayor, one day we were talking, they had a change in mayors because rebuilding is daunting, and so Mayor Dan came on the scene, an amazing man, firefighter himself with incredible stories from that day. As we were meeting with them in town council one day, I said, that flag on the pole, is that the flag that survived the fire? Oh, yeah. I'm like, could we donate a new flag to your community? Because that's part of your history. That should be in a safe place and preserved. And they're like, crickets, right? Fast forward till a year ago, Labor Day, we got a call a month or two in advance from the clerk down in Malden. She said, Richie, we're going to have a one-year commemoration event here in Malden on Labor Day, and we'd love for the Pathfinders to open that event by retiring the American flag and raising a new flag over Malden as a symbol of hope. And that's what's happening right here. Pathfinders and adventurers from all over the conference drove. One club drove twice. Pendleton got their days mixed up, and they came on Sunday, and realized, oops, wrong day, drove all the way back to Pendleton because some of them had to work and came back, left at 4 o'clock the next morning to be there on Labor Day. That picture, you'll see in a moment, not this exact picture, but this moment was captured and featured on the front page of the Spokesman Review. Pathfinders made this front page of the Spokesman Review 2 out of 5 days that week because of their work in Malden. We were never mentioned, never named, and I'm just fine with that. Because what I would like to be is those people who are everywhere when there is need, and they just show up until people start saying, who are those kids? Next slide. Once you have learned their names, met their needs, served them, become recognized as a trusted partner, then you can share with your friends the one who gives you hope and prompts you to serve. That is what we have been told is the one way, the only way, that will be truly effective in reaching the people. Next slide. In case we might get sidetracked, Ellen White added this in Desire of Ages, in his contact with men, he did not ask, what is your creed? To what church do you belong? He exercised his helping power in behalf of all who needed help, period. Instead of secluding himself in a hermit's cell in order to show his heavenly character, he labored earnestly for humanity. Next slide. We're almost there. Oh, other direction. One more. There we go. So I just want to ask, what's your legacy, Brewster Seventh-day Adventist Church? Those of you that are attending here today, likely there are others who have gone before you and they have left a reputation in this community about who Seventh-day Adventists are. You have inherited that, for good or ill. Click a couple times, would you, for me? Let me tell you two quick stories really quickly. I've already talked to you about three Seventh-day Adventist physicians who moved to my hometown years ago. In Fairfield, Washington, if you come to visit, there are two parks. One park is named Thiel Park, after Dr. and Dr. Thiel, and the other park is named Hart Park, after their partner, Dr. Hart. That's legacy. If you were to go out into the Palouse around Upper Columbia Academy, knock on any door, and ask a farmer that's 50 and up, who delivered you when you were born? Their answer would be Thiel or Hart, right? They left an incredible legacy. And in fact, when my family moved to Fairfield and we opened a ministry office on Main Street, our ministry office was actually in the building, in the space that had been the office of Drs. Thiel and Hart. Incredible legacy they left behind. But that's not the whole legacy. When I moved out into the Palouse with my family, I started meeting our neighbors, and a lot of them felt like they already knew me because I've been on the radio in Spokane for 13 years as Chaplain Richie. And so I would tell stories about my kids and my garden and all these things and make biblical points from those. And so people were like, oh, are you Chaplain Richie? And one day I was talking with one of my new neighbors who was the wife of the superintendent of Liberty School, just down the road from Upper Columbia Academy. And she said, so, she was excited to meet Chaplain Richie, and she said, so you're Seventh-day Adventist, aren't you? I said, yes. And then she said something that broke my heart. She said, oh, we know you Adventists. You pretty well keep to yourselves. And I've thought about that so many times since that conversation. And you know what? She's not wrong, right? I mean, in my community, I'm not talking about yours, I don't live in Brewster. They drive past Upper Columbia Academy on their way to and from work if they have town jobs. And they wonder, what are those people doing there in all those brick buildings? When they have football games at Liberty School, the Adventists aren't there, right? When they have community events, picnics, parades, Memorial Day celebrations, the Adventists aren't there. One of the ways that all the people in my little community connect with each other is most of them attend the community church. Well, I had a child in the daycare, or the preschool, I guess, operated by the community church. We got to know our neighbors at the community church. And when it got to the end of his preschool year, we went to the graduation there in the church, became good friends with the pastor of the church. I made a decision when my neighbor said those words to me several years ago. The Brower family is going to do what we can to change that reputation in our community. So when Fairfield started a picnic in the park and movie night in our little hometown, we said, hey, let's go. And you know who sat on the Brower blanket and watched the movie there in the park that night? The mayor, because it's a small town. And Mayor Katie's a friend of ours. You know who gave us hugs as we walked into the park? Cheryl, the clerk, because she's become a good friend of ours. You know who's excited to see my wife every time she goes to the bank? Denise, because she's become a good friend of ours. And when when our librarians got moved from our little rural town library because they weren't wearing masks and somebody complained, you know who wrote letters to the library district and got them reinstated? The Browers and a bunch of our neighbors. You know who has one of our kittens as a cat at their house? Our librarian. We've made connections because we're in a small town. We got to know our neighbors. And they know we're Seventh-day Adventists, and they know we're not keeping to ourselves. Next slide. There it is. Cover the spokesman review. Next slide. That would be Memorial Day. Those Pathfinders stood in the hot sun as an honor guard for every veteran who, or family member of a fallen veteran whose plaque was put on the wall behind them. It was hot. And all the people in the community took note that these young people cared enough to stand in the sun and celebrate these veterans. Made a difference. Next slide. Here we are, back where we started. This is what Jesus said. I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me into your home. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Why are you here? Why is the Brewster Seventh-day Adventist Church here? I think there's never been a better time to have an answer to that question and say, all right, Lord, what would you like us to do? How can we follow those steps in building connections in our community with our neighbors so that when the time comes, they can hear from us as trusted sources, follow me. The words of Jesus ringing through our lives, our lips, and our church doors. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for these friends. It's good to be here in Brewster and reconnect with so many people that I've appreciated over the years. God, you care about Brewster and Pateras and Chelan and communities all around Bridgeport. The people, they matter to you. You have a plan for this congregation. And Lord, I don't know what that is, but you do. And you've already been nudging people in these pews this morning, putting thoughts and dreams and ideas long before I showed up. And I just ask that you would fan those to life and that this church would recommit themselves not to just great worship, but to really being a force for the kingdom of God in this community. I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.